This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Sharp Money on a Wednesday. Always excited to get to the third hour. Why? Our buddy and professional handicapper for 30 plus years joins us in studio. He does this for us, and it's a huge benefit to the audience. We hear back all the time feedback on Scott Spritzer. He's the best. Doc Sports, docsports.com. You can check out the videos, free plays over there. Also, at Scott Wins on Twitter with two T's, Amal Shaw, Patrick Maher, of course, Dustin Sweetelson. Scott Spritzer joins. You know, it's funny, just kind of off the beaten path a little bit. Amal and I were discussing during the break. We both lived in many locations. I've lived in New York City, Charleston, South Carolina, Los Angeles, Nevada, all over the place. I will say, Scott, now that is your home. You were born in Nebraska, but you've been in Vegas and Nevada forever. So that's home for you. Your daughter was born there. You were married there. I would say the one city that I moved away from that I've gained the most reverence for as I get further away from it is Nevada, is Las Vegas. I don't know what that means. And Amal, you kind of shook your head when I said that. I don't know what it means. I didn't really have a feel for Vegas in the 3 years that I lived there because we had a pandemic. I was a single guy living in a subdivision. So I don't know if I really gave it a proper shot, but I will say there's something that kind of tugs at me about the people, the community, the local news. I don't know what it was, but Amal, does that make sense to you before we get Scott's response? I've grown reverence for Vegas as I left it.
100%. I can tell you, for me, South Florida, that was the same way after I left, and same thing with Dallas. LA, not as much, simply because the traffic, and I just hated paying You know, what felt like it back then. It wasn't even that expensive, but what seems like an obscene amount of money for gas nowadays.
This is your city. I don't know if it makes you prideful to hear me say that, but I kind of miss it, Scott. What is it about living in Vegas for you and your family that you love so much?
God, it's just the freedom, man. It's like, you know, I'm telling you, I can do basically almost anything I want 24/7. And, you know, growing up, I grew up in a suburb of Omaha. Omaha's maybe about 800,000 people, greater Omaha area. The suburb I grew up in was probably about, it's probably about 50 or 60,000, the population. And the sidewalks, you know, they roll up at 8 p.m. basically. And I was never into that. You guys know me. My circadian rhythm has always been what it is now, even when I was a kid. And so I also wanted to move to the West Coast. It was funny. I was discussing with a friend of mine who's from Torrance, California the other day. And he goes, yeah, my dad used to say that you Midwesterners used to call us all kinds of names out here in the West Coast. And I said, yeah, because we were jealous. I go, you know, I'm sitting in January watching an NFL playoff game with a parka on inside my house after shoveling 8 feet of snow for 6 hours. And I'm watching guys in, you know, San Diego or LA in their shorts and their polo shirts, you know, in 75 degrees. So I knew what I was doing right away. I came out to Vegas. First time was in 76 with my parents. Second time was in 80. When I was in 80, I was 13. I was out here for at least 6 weeks, maybe 8 weeks. I got on the plane to go home. I was in such a state of depression. And I said, that's it. As soon as high school's out, I'm going to UNLV. I'm going to Las Vegas. I almost went to San Diego a couple of times, guys. I'm going to say San Francisco 15, 20 years ago. And before that, San Diego and Dallas. I love the Dallas area. Those are the only places I could have lived back then or moved to if I left Las Vegas. And San Francisco is fantastic because I'm a huge, huge restaurant fan. We love to eat out. We are foodies in my house. And there were some of the best restaurants in San Francisco. My favorite is closed. But anyway, so Las Vegas is it. And I've thought about, you know, where can I move? I mean, Singapore, I guess. I don't know. Do they keep things open 24/7? I mean, it's got to be a 24/7 town. There's got to be gambling. I can't get caned for, you know, going out at midnight or something like that. It's, you know, where else are you going to go besides Vegas?
You're absolutely right about that. You know, Patrick, to his point, the one thing that is so great about Vegas, I remember it's changed a little bit post-COVID. But I used to say in Vegas, it doesn't make a difference if it's 3 a.m. or 3 p.m. You can do almost 80 to 85% of things that you do at 3 p.m. at 3 a.m. in this town. And that's what makes it so unique and so great. And you're absolutely right, Scott. And Patrick knows this because he grew up in the Midwest. I can remember watching the Browns, and it's like a 4 o'clock game. It'd be Don Crickey on the call. Yep. And the game's in San Diego, and you're like, dude, why the hell do we live in this 4 feet of snow? We won't see the sun until about another 2.5-3 months. I mean, it's unbelievable.
It'll be snowing at least one day in May. Yeah. All that in 90 degrees the next day. And, you know, it's funny because I was talking about how, you know, I could have moved. I love San Francisco. I love going to baseball games up there back in the day. That entire area was fantastic. It's a shame what it's become. But it was a beautiful, beautiful city. And I've gone to plenty of baseball games up there. But, you know, I guess next up, it would maybe be San Diego or something like that. I could equate maybe Miami to a certain extent with Vegas. But
not
I don't know, man.
Not anymore.
I can get done. Like you know, you've got a situation here with Amal who's, you know, up late working, preparing. Yeah. And I could get done at 1 a.m., Patrick, and I could run down to Chinatown and get a bowl of beef Vietnamese soup at 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, my favorite Japanese restaurant in the world is in Chinatown. I can go there at 2 o'clock in the morning and do some time. So that's just, you know, a good lifestyle
that
I've developed.
That's a great point. Yeah. When I lived in New York City, I always felt like there was some omnipresence where you never felt alone. It was always kind of on. Vegas has the same feel. It's really interesting. Even in the suburbs, Henderson and Summerlin, I don't know what it is. There's a fondness that I've grown. And Dustin, can I just get your take? Because you've lived everywhere, Atlanta, New York, Los Angeles. Now you are what, going into year 3 in Vegas? What would you say the experience is like? Because frankly, a lot of people listening all over the country, they come to VSiN for the betting advice, but they also have this, Vegas has a lure. So I wonder what you think about living there.
Yeah, so it's a good and bad thing for me because I just have a general life motto is if it feels good, I want to keep doing it. And in Vegas, there's a lot of things that feel good. So I keep doing them, all of them. And it's a lot of fun. It's a great city to live in. The one thing I think I underrated about this town, because of the tourism, because of the casinos, because everyone comes here. One, I have more people visiting me here yearly than I did anywhere else I ever lived. That includes L.A. People would sometimes come to L.A., but it was so hard to get to the same area. It's still a small town. But what I'd say about that is that Vegas has everything that you could want to find that you would get in a big town, meaning entertainment and food. You get that in a smaller package here, and you get it at the very best.
And we get along for the most part. Everybody in this town basically gets along. You know, it's like, I think it's because you go into a casino and everybody's from everywhere. You know, it's like the dealers. Yep. You'll see Thailand, you'll see England, you'll see, you know, whatever. And everybody has to work together. And I feel more international in Vegas than any of the international towns I've ever visited because of that. And there's a situation where you just got to make things happen and get along together. And we're all kind of in the same boat in Las Vegas. So you don't see that in too many places. I will say this. Back in like 2008, my wife and I and my daughter at the time was like 4. And we were in Irvine. And we were looking in the Irvine, Newport, Laguna Beach area. We actually had real estate, a realtor out there showing us houses. I was there for maybe 3 days. We probably looked at 10 homes. We're laying on the beach at Laguna Beach one day, and I'm like, we're going back to Vegas, aren't we? And she's like, yeah, we're going back to Vegas. As much as I love the Irvine area and Laguna Beach, it's a beautiful area. It's calm, quiet for the most part. We came back to Vegas.
Well, you know, the hardest thing is, guys, when you go, I remember one time I went back to Dallas, and I got there on a Wednesday night at like 10 p.m., and I'm like, hey, let's go somewhere to eat. And a friend of mine's like, where are we going? It's Wednesday night at 10 o'clock. I mean, this is the only city, Patrick. I've waited for about 45 minutes. Fuck him long. You wait for an hour at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Excuse me? I think we have to bleep out that name.
I believe that was a restaurant.
Correct. It is a restaurant.
It was a Vietnamese restaurant.
Or it was the sound of Sharp Money getting canceled.
And by the way, Dustin says he does what he does, you know, if it feels good. And I'm like, I've heard you can go blind, so you better be careful, man.
Well, I'd also say a phone conversation about what Dustin does that feels good made me go blind on the other end of the call. So whatever that means for everybody.
Well, this show's taking a turn.
Yeah. One thing, just to follow up, and I appreciate you guys humoring me here because it's something I've been thinking about. I believe as far as population, it's the 25th largest in the United States, or however you want to compute that. I think there's what, 650,000 people in Las Vegas proper. Amal, you're better with that than I. To what Scott just said, while it's huge, it still has a bit of a small town feel. So that's the camaraderie that Scott was talking about. Somehow with all the people, kind of the influx of people, there has been a small town
feel and vibe that's remained in Vegas, Amal.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. But I think also the great thing about this town is it lends itself to individual activities as well as multiple, you know, doing things with multiple people. So it's a fun place. You can go out. You know, sometimes you see people, you can be in the middle of a casino at 3 o'clock in the morning. You see someone playing slots by themselves or what have you, or you go to a dice table. It's pretty crowded. There's a lot of different things. And the one thing I think that gets underappreciated here, we have no state income tax. Patrick, you know that very well. And then if you want to go to Southern California, which is a great place to do a variety of different things, and Scott goes there all the time, you're just a four-hour car ride to L.A. or you're a 45-minute flight to L.A. or San Diego. So everything is within good proximity. Beautiful national parks around here. Bryce and Zion are my two favorite. But there's a variety of different things to do.
In concerts, if you like music, and Scott Spritzer likes music more than anybody, I mean, bands are going to come through Vegas. That's just the way it is.
It wasn't that way in the 80s when I came out here. I found out that Omaha at that point of time, 84, 85, had much more culture than Las Vegas back then. It was rough. So guys like me, we're not too happy with the music scene, but it has become big. And you can find a decent concert at a little club almost any night of the week.
I don't know what the website is or Twitter handle, but there's a Twitter handle that kind of highlights before and after. Like, here was Vegas in the 80s. Here was Vegas in the 90s. Like, over the last 15 years, what's happened to Vegas, Scott, you could speak, and we got a minute here, you could speak on it better than anybody. It's blown up. It's unrecognizable.
Yeah, I like the old architecture. I miss the old look of the Strip. And I get you got to move too. On and you got to advance and all that kind of stuff. So no big deal with that, but I do miss that. But, yeah, it was 400,000 people when I moved here, Patrick. There's 2 million plus now. I can tell you a story about getting on stage with the Cordell Gunter Coasters a few times
back in the day,
the Flamingo Hilton. So it's changed. You don't just get up on stage with the bands anymore in a Las Vegas casino and sing your heart out, you know?
And a correction, not 650,000, over 2 million people. And another correction, Dustin enjoys pleasure. What he meant was he really likes to play video games. That's what I meant. It's just, that's it, video games.
You know what? There's a joystick involved.
Oh, boy.
Wow. We're talking Commanders with Spritzer next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Guys, I'm actually going to ask you to pick up that Vegas Aces conversation, which I think was very interesting, but quickly, it's football season and bettors know that this is when the money is made. Nobody knows football like VSIN, and now's the time to become a VSIN subscriber and get our comprehensive college and NFL guides. Only VSIN subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and pro football seasons. Our experts provide profiles on every team, advanced stats and power ratings, plus best bets on season win totals, division finishes, and player awards. You can sign up for $199. You'll receive both the guides, full VSIN access all the way through the Super Bowl, or you can join for $19 for your first month and see everything VSIN has to offer to up your betting game. Go to VSIN.com/subscribe for all your options. Become part of the Sports Betting Network. Professional handicapper Scott Spritzer, customary spot here on Sharp Money on a Wednesday. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. This is VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. Fellas, why don't you pick up that conversation because you bonded over the spot that the Aces were in last night. Amal, you can talk about what you mentioned during the break where you kind of starred that game as a look-ahead spot. And Scott, you bet it as well. Amal, I'll let you pick it up.
Yeah, so Las Vegas Aces have the best record in the WNBA, the prohibitive favorite to win the title if you don't follow the league. And they were playing the New York Liberty, the second betting favorite. And the Liberty were catching 5.5 at home. Patrick, the Liberty are down 3 at the end of the first quarter at home. They end up outscoring the Las Vegas Aces 80-39 the rest of the way in the second half, 50-17. And I thought getting embarrassed by a team with the type of talent that they have, you talked about it during the commercial break, the intensity that Becky Hammon brings to the court, you knew this team would bounce back. They were laying 8.5 against the Dallas Wings, who, by the way, Scott, on Sunday should have never been favored again by 8.5 against the Chicago Sky.
Right.
And this game, Patrick, the Vegas Aces run away with it, laying 8.5. They were up 54-26 at halftime. You had the game covered easily. They were up by 34 at the end of 3, end up going on to win, Scott, by 20 points. And one of the things that I like, and we've talked about this a lot on the show, is whenever a team in whatever sport, but in baseball, if a team gives up 14, 15, 16 runs, I expect the pitching staff to bounce back in that next game. And I thought this was a great spot for the Aces, having gotten absolutely just destroyed, 38-point loss. And for them to come back, and that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, well, you and I were on the same wavelength. It was a top play for me last night, and I'm watching the game. I was watching a little bit of the game, like maybe second quarter, and kind of flipped back and forth in the third and fourth quarter, the loss to the Liberty. It was a great spot for New York. I didn't bet it, but it was a great spot. I mean, they're expected to be one of two elite teams this year. They kind of struggled early on in the season. They've got it together now. But as you mentioned, Las Vegas, I mean, the Aces are a virtual all-star team.
Yeah.
And they've got the best coach in basketball in the WNBA and would probably be one of the top coaches in the NBA if you want to really, you know, talk about Becky Hammon for a second. So I'm watching a little bit of the second half. They're down five at halftime against New York. They scored 9 points in the third quarter, 8 points in the fourth quarter. Maybe the all-time best team ever in the WNBA, and they scored 17 second-half points on 18% shooting. And I saw where, you know, I'd seen where Becky Hammon went nuts saying, you know, we got a rebound at 48-24 by New York.
Yeah.
It was just a weird spot for Vegas. They didn't react well in New York in the second half, so we were on the same wavelength. I'm thinking there's no way. I was actually a little surprised the line wasn't 10.
Yeah, so to be honest with you, I was sure the number's going to be double digits.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be, and then I didn't think it would be lower than 10. And as you mentioned, 54-26 at half. The only fear you have in the WNBA is you see teams all of a sudden score 8 points in a third quarter after scoring 50 points in the first half. But Vegas was so dialed in after the embarrassment on Sunday that they just never let up until the very end when they were securely ahead.
To your point, the Mystics, Washington, were leading the LA Sparks three quarters of the game, and including halfway through the fourth quarter. They blow a 9-10-point lead in the fourth quarter, end up losing the game. But Patrick, for me, this goes back all the way because I was a huge NBA fan back in the 80s. The Lakers were playing on the Memorial Day Massacre in Boston. They lose that game 148-114, bounce back in that game. And for me, it always just kind of stood out. And it doesn't give you a guarantee in terms of a win, but whether it's in the NFL, college football, or any of these sports, if you see a team that has talent and ability get destroyed in a certain spot, in the next game, the likelihood their defense or their offense is going to respond in a way to kind of eradicate that embarrassment, that's usually a pretty good betting spot.
Great job, guys. Learned something. Wonderful stuff there. And Scott, you and I were discussing a little bit during the break with them all. Anybody that doesn't think Becky Hammon has the temperament, disposition, or demeanor to coach men, I assure you, you go to an Aces game, because remember, longtime assistant on Pop staff there with San Antonio, and thought potentially to get a head coaching job in the NBA. Dudes will respect her.
Absolutely.
Because I was afraid of her. There is an edge to Becky Hammon, one of the all-time great women's basketball players, but there is an edge to her when she is coaching that it doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman. It's legit.
I think she needs, when she eventually gets that opportunity in the NBA, she needs a player like a Giannis or a Joker who's going to respect the leadership, and they are going to lead that team in that type of situation. I think she'll do just fine. And you absolutely summarized it perfectly, Patrick. I would not have wanted to be on that team plane from New York to Dallas with the Aces.
Oh, no. No, she is. I don't know if you guys have been to an Aces game. It's actually a pretty cool experience. I wasn't expecting transparency to enjoy it, but I went, and it was a lot of fun, to be honest.
Very right close, there. Longtime friend of mine is their play-by-play guy on radio, which is T.C. Martin.
No kidding.
T.C. and I have been friends for almost 30 years, and so I've gone to several games over the last few years, only a couple this year, but in past years I've gone to several since they moved to Vegas. But yeah, TC's been their voice now for the last, I don't know what it's been, since they've been here, 5 years or whatever. Yeah. And it's kind of cool because they're actually taking the broadcast crew on the road this year for the first time. So you can listen to the games. But I mean, he's got nothing but glowing things to say about Becky Hammons. It's not just because he is the broadcaster for that team. It's also because he's been close enough to do interviews constantly. And you can see things in her that even some NBA coaches don't have that build towards success if you get that job in the NBA. And I agree with you, Amal. I think you hit it on the head, too. You got to get a guy like Giannis or the Joker to be on that team that she coaches the first season, because they're going to show the rest of the locker room or the one or two people who might not respect her because of her gender that you better respect her because she knows what she's doing.
I agree with you completely. And real quick, Patrick, just to put a bow on this, in the WNBA right now, the odds are out of whack for the Aces to win the title. They're going to win it barring a couple of injuries, not just one injury. But I would look at it when you get to the playoffs, potentially Vegas in four under 4.5 games or something like that, depending on where you can find maybe a series victory price, because they are just so far better than everyone else, that one game in New York notwithstanding.
Great stuff. We opened the show talking about the Rivera Bieniemy drama with the Commanders. I'm curious because you are going to take the three with the Commanders on Friday against Cleveland in the preseason. Would like to get your thoughts on that individual bet, but also just an overview on the Commanders. Their win total sitting at 6.5. It's a team that won 8 games last year, Scott.
Yeah, we probably talked about this in early June when I first started getting into the NFL wins totals. Played them under. And I got under 7, and shortly thereafter, it dropped to 6.5 just about everywhere. I think this team is in trouble when the regular season rolls around. I don't know what's going on right now with Bieniemy and the players other than they say he's too intense. We'll see what comes of that. I did take the points in this one. It's going to sound funny, but I like him at 3+3 better than I do at 3.5 or 4. And the reason for that is just in preseason football, it's like you got to be – there's got to be a really big difference between the two teams and what they're bringing to the field in preseason to be bigger than a 3-point favorite, but you don't want to lay more than 7. And you'll see 3.5 to 7 is an ideal spot to play a favorite. An underdog of 3 or less is the way you want to go for the most part with the dogs when it's a smaller line. So, but I always look for, we talked a little bit about this last week. I look for quarterback rotations in preseason. They could be garbage in the regular season, but I want to see a good preseason rotation. And I know Cleveland kind of has one. It looks like, from what I heard, Watson is going to probably play a little bit in this game for the Browns, but you got Sam Howell, projected starter. You've got Jacoby Brissett. You've got Jake Fromm. These guys are 1, 2, and 3 on the roster. They're one of 3 teams that I think you play on or stay away from the game this preseason because of that quarterback rotation. And I was looking back at that game last week for Cleveland, the Hall of Fame game. And when Kellen Mond, you know, he ended up with real nice stats, and so did DTR. But in the first half, when the Jets sort of cared, preseason style of caring, they didn't do anything on offense, Cleveland. They were down 13-0 at one point, 16-7 at the break. Well, the Washington Commanders aren't going to, I don't think, just lay down for a good chunk or a whole half, even though it's preseason. There's some urgency with this team. The talk we heard from Rivera coming out relating to the Bieniemy situation, I think there's going to be a little bit more urgency to this team. I don't go big on any preseason plays. I really don't. My bets are small. But it's a situation where I like the 3 here, and it has a lot to do with that quarterback rotation. Again, you got 3 guys who can fight for at least the second, and you know, position, second string, but Howell, Brissett, and Fromm, and I think they'll out-duel the Cleveland quarterbacks. One real quick note as we wrap it up, you know, Cleveland ran the ball extremely well last week against the Jets. What do the Commanders do best? They stop the run. And I know you're going to see a lot of second and third stringers, guys trying to make the team, but it's the same style, the same format that they're going to play in that allowed them to be so good against the run last year. So took the 3 here with the Commanders. You can get a little bit more than that right now as we speak.
That's a tremendous preseason breakdown. Love to hear it. When we return, you do have a season win total on a team out west. Also, you got to play on the diamond tonight. The Dodgers taking on the D-backs. The D-backs, what the hell happened to that team? We were all on the season win total over. Since July 1, they've gone under, I can assure you. We're back with professional handicapper Scott Spreitzer right here on Sharp Money. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If anybody is really a degenerate, I just bet Colorado Springs Switchbacks FC against FC Tulsa tonight in the USL Championship. I wouldn't recommend it because I got $1.30 and it's jumped a little bit. Anywho, VSiN, we'll get to Scott, Amal, and Dustin in just a second. Want to let you know that VSiN, you can become a VSiN Pro. The VSiN picks page, we've got Scott Spreitzer's picks, we've got Amal's picks, we've got Samich's picks, we've got Dustin's picks, are all there, and you can sort them by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view the betting trends, records, profit, ROI. Sign up today for $19, VSiN.com/subscribe. Fun conversation during the break about this matchup between the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks. All 4 of us will attack this because I think all 4 have an angle on it. But I wanted to back up a little bit. Professional handicapper Scott Spreitzer, you were talking about the importance when betting baseball, because you'll see a 50-cent move. You'll see big-time moves. Being a night owl benefits you big time when betting baseball.
Absolutely. You can get lines, let's say if you like a favorite, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning Pacific time of $1.20. It could be $1.45, $1.50 by 9 a.m. Pacific time, just 8 hours later. So like I said, with them all and Dustin and yourself, you guys all follow this so closely too, that, you know, I've been doing this for my entire adult life, basically. And 80-85% of the time you can beat the closing line. Doesn't mean you're going to win that much. You're going to have losing weeks and all that kind of stuff. But the bottom line is you're going to get the better of the number 80% to 85% of the time. And I'm factoring in those 15% to 20% of being incorrect of, you know, LeBron, it was announced at noon that he's not playing tonight. So the number moves. You didn't beat that number, right? So I'm even factoring in that. So, you know, like last night, the Dodgers were $1.20 in several books last night. That wasn't the case as of about 9 a.m. Pacific time, 10 a.m. Pacific time this morning.
You know, to Scott's point, guys, you really should not be handicapping that day of. So, for example, today, for example, Wednesday, August 9th, you really should already be looking at Thursday, August 10th games, Friday, August 11th, because that way when the lines come out on the evening time on the West Coast, say 6 p.m., maybe a little bit, give or take an hour, depending on which book you're using, that way you're prepared to go. The games for today, the work should have already been done in advance. That way, as Scott alluded to, you have an opportunity to get such better numbers. And one other thing Scott brought up, it's a great point. If you've been doing this long enough, you have an idea in which way the line is going to move on so many of these games. You see a Dodger game, they open up at a minus 120. You have a feeling it's going to probably crawl in their favor, especially with the way the Diamondbacks are playing. Same thing with college basketball. You see Kansas at home playing Baylor, 3.5. Chances are by the time you look at it tomorrow morning, it's going to be 4.5 or 5. So try to anticipate some of these moves. And over time, you'll become pretty good at it. This is not rocket science in terms of anticipation. The move. Obviously, winning is the key, but the anticipation, Patrick, is not as difficult as people may think.
And you know, yeah. I'll just throw that in there if I can. I just want to jump in one second because I 100% agree with them all that you got to be looking ahead. And I'm telling you what, right now, what I'll be doing when I leave here, I'm going to go grab breakfast, and then I'm going to, I'll be in front of my desk at probably by 4 p.m. Pacific time. I'll print out off my line service tomorrow's baseball games, and I'll be handicapping tomorrow's games while watching in my home office on the TVs the games that are going on in the background, and I'll have everything done. And then tonight I'll sit there and I'll go back and I'll say, okay, did, you know, somebody's bullpen get burnt? You know, have they been throwing too many innings the last couple of games that I might factor that into it? Or is a player going to take a day off tomorrow that you want in the lineup? But for the most part, my handicapping gets done 4, 5, 6 o'clock Pacific time the night before in baseball. I start on college basketball on a Friday for a Saturday around noon or 1 p.m. Pacific time. Even before lines come out, there might be one or two books that have lines, and they're not the best lines. They're just kind of give you a little gauge. And I'll jump on that noon, 1 Pacific for Saturday's games. But I already earmark 2 or 3 days before that teams I'm going to be looking at. If Georgetown does this on Tuesday and they do this on Thursday, I might like them in this spot or not like them in this spot on Saturday and then go back and look at it.
Patrick, I absolutely love what Scott just said there. Perfect example with the Aces game on Sunday. They played at, I want to say, about noon Pacific time out here. Might have been an hour earlier than that. But as soon as the game was a blowout in the second half and you knew Becky was going to pull all her players in that second half or in the fourth quarter, I was like, okay, well, as soon as the line comes out on the Aces, and in my mind, I said, anything up to 11, I'm going to lay it. It comes out at 8.5, take the play, win or lose. It's not about that result in that particular instance. It's just the situational spot was so good. And to Scott's point on college basketball, same thing. I'm looking at, okay, depending on what Georgetown does tonight at home in this particular spot, I'm looking at their Saturday game. I eliminate certain leagues. I may not play them as much. For me, I'm a big SEC, Big 12 guy, Pac-12 guy in college hoops, and then Pac, and of course the Big 10 as well. I don't bet the ACC as much, so I'm not as enamored with that league, but I'm looking 3-4 days ahead, especially in college basketball. It's easier. College football, you look at situational spots. The lines come out on the West Coast Sunday at 11 a.m. Good opportunity for you to be able to get an idea on Saturday night what you're thinking about, because you should have already had an idea in terms of the NFL, or you probably already made your bets for the NFL. So it gives you an opportunity to be in front of what you want the number to be before it moves in one direction or another.
Great lessons to be found. Thank you very much, boys. Appreciate that. And as Scott, you mentioned, Bobby Miller, Merrill Kelly. Let's dive into this cap, boys. So Scott got it $1.20. I see shops $1.40. So he saved 20 cents by getting in ahead of the move. Let's get your cap here. You like the Dodgers.
Yeah. And again, this doesn't mean you're, you know, like you're, we're saying here for somebody who might be listening for the first or second time that, you know, oh, it's automatic. You know, we got a great line, so we're going to win.
Correct.
But over the long haul, you're going to win more than you lose in all likelihood by getting in front of those lines. You're going to save yourself money on the losses. So anyway, Dodgers, I had L.A. last night. I'm backing them again on Wednesday. It has a lot to do with how bad the D-backs have been playing for their past 30 games. They're 7-23 during this last month of baseball. But, you know, first of all, you got Bobby Miller, 2.61 ERA, .113 whip in 6 road starts. He's only allowed 1 home run in 31 innings pitched away from home, and the Dodgers won 5 of those 6 outings. And I think he gets plenty of help tonight. I mean, his team is averaging 6.5 runs per game on the road against right-handers. And then I look at Merrill Kelly, and the reason I think the line was as short as it was last night is because Merrill Kelly's putting up decent numbers. Yeah. But all of a sudden you say, okay, well, he's putting up decent numbers, but his team's still just 4-6 in his 10 home starts. And then you look and you see what he did against LA. Well, 14 starts against the Dodgers. He's got a 570 ERA, a .164 whip. He's 0-10. His team's 2-12 in those 14 starts. And I like looking at things like this because it tells you how good a team or how bad a team is when they're facing a pitcher who might be, you know, actually going out there and performing well the last month or the entire season. When facing a pitcher with an ERA, when facing a pitcher with a whip of 125 or lower, the Dodgers have gone on a 56-23 run. National League pitchers, 125 whip or lower, the Dodgers are 56-23 the last 79. That's sick. That shows you how good this team is, even when they're facing the best pitchers in the National League.
Yeah, Scott makes a great argument for why you'd want to take the Dodgers in this spot. Bobby Miller on the bump, he alluded to his stats. I'm going to go with the under here in this game. Numbers floating between 9 and 9.5, guys. And the reason why I like this number under is you mentioned Merrill Kelly's lifetime numbers, but this year, 2 starts, 9 1/3 innings pitch. He's done very, very well against LA, just giving up a 1.93 ERA, 3.18 ERA in his last 30 days. He's been very effective. And, you know, a night game in this one, he's got an ERA of 2.66 here. I don't think the Diamondbacks are really able to score. I don't want to lay the 132 with the Dodgers. I like the way Merrill Kelly has pitched all year. I think this would be a little bit of a lower scoring game. And if you can get 9.5, it's a good one here. And even the 9, Patrick, could be a plus money price right now at the South Point. 9 unders plus 105.
Wonderful. Big guy, I think you're on this one too. I know you like Miller as a pitcher there for the Dodgers.
Yeah, I'm back in the Dodgers. Look, it's only start number 4 for Merrill Kelly since coming back from the blood clots. I don't think he's going to go very deep into games, and I still have questions about that Diamondbacks bullpen. But overall, eventually these hitters are going to get to him based on the numbers of their career versus Merrill Kelly playing in division all the games in years past. They're hitting .305 lifetime against him. Mookie Betts really wears him out. Newcomer to LA, Ahmed Rosario, 5-6 lifetime. It's not a great way to, like, predict the future looking at past history, but when certain guys just absolutely own them, Will Smith is a .320 lifetime guy against Kelly. There's enough power in this offense to have a good sample size and a lot of success against this pitcher. I like backing LA, where you're getting a shorter price on the better team, the hotter team who's on a win streak against an Arizona team that has lost, like, what, 6 or 7 in a row.
And Scott, we talked about it. They're like 7-30 since July. I mean, what happened to the Snakes?
Yeah, 7 wins in the last 30 games, 7 straight losses. You kind of hit it on the head during the break is, you know, what's going on in the clubhouse. I'm a Lovello fan. I talked about it before the season that I was so happy when they had all those injuries a couple years ago and they, you know, they couldn't win a game. And I was happy with the administration and keeping Lovello in place instead of canning him and blaming him. But all of a sudden this team's gone from 50-34. They're now 57 wins, 57 losses. I'm sweating 74.5 wins on a team that was 50-34, you know, so I don't know what's going on, but Dustin hit it on the head too. This team has been a mess in the pen, you know, all season long. Even when they were winning, they were a mess in the pen. And they went out and they got a closer, but they're 0-7 since they got their closer.
The importance of the bullpen, always.
Angels.
It's attrition too. Like the bullpen, if your bullpen starts hot, but it ain't good, it'll catch you in the end. Bullpens are so fluid year to year. There's so much variance. It really is incredible. As I see, per usual, leftover notes from Scott Spreitzer. Plenty of games to attack next week. Professional handicapper, you can find the picks and the write-ups and the videos at docsports.com, docsports.com, and at Scott Wins on Twitter. As always, an amazing conversation. Scott, we'll see you next Wednesday.
Take care, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Okay, we're coming back with the top 10 and more. Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
$19, that's it. VSIN.com/subscribe. You get a month, and then you decide. You know, no strings attached. NFL betting guide, college football betting guide, daily best bets, 24/7 video stream, power ratings, and betting splits. It's all there. VSIN.com/subscribe. Let me give you one play from Samich today. And then you can catch the rest over there with the picks at vsin.com/subscribe. I'll give you, I'll give you the Giants. So he's on the Giants plus 120, fellas, at Angels and Ohtani. The Angels are, Amal Shaw, Dustin Swielsen, I'm Patrick Maher. The Angels, that's the Cubs, okay. They justified their actions at the trade deadline. The Angels, they don't. I mean, it's just like.
If only someone saw it coming. I mean, it's not like the whole world was like, this is a bad idea, guys. And Artie Moreno's like, no, we're just going to still do it.
I got a weird feeling. I know nothing about the finances. I got a weird feeling Ohtani's going to stick around. I don't
know
why.
Really? I think he's going to the Mets.
I don't know why. I think there's something about his character. The more I read about him, I think he might actually care.
Dude, you were in that spring training facility. They're a dumpy organization. They're a second-rate team. They're the number two team, not even playing in the city that they're marketing in. They're full of it. They're a fraudulent team. He definitely went there, looked around, and went, I thought I was going to be in Los Angeles. I'm in the suburbs hanging out with Ryan Atwood and Seth Cohen on the OC. It's a joke. He's leaving there. He's going somewhere more important. He's too big of a star to be wasting away in a town where little kids go to hang out with Mickey Mouse.
Can I just correct myself? There's no chance he sticks around. Ohtani is good as gone. I totally agree with your rant, and I apologize. Even down to the guy that was in charge of helping us at the spring training website, now in jail. And remember, we thought this guy is wild. I don't want to get into the details, but my man is in jail.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That spring training Cactus League site for the Angels. They deserve more. We should have known when we walked into Socha's office in his last year and he had a tub. I mean, a garbage can full of Alka-Seltzers.
But here's the thing. It was the first place you and I had gone to. I don't think you had either. I had never been inside a spring training facility, especially like where we were getting access to. And we didn't know. We were like, oh, it's all kind of dumpy, right? No. Dodgers facility, state of the art. Rockies/Diamondbacks facility, better than some major league stadiums.
Yeah, no, literally. It's the Angels play in a dump. It's really weird. They're the second class citizen. And remember, they call themselves a mall. They call themselves Los Angeles for the branding and the value of the actual franchise. They were Anaheim before. Tulsa is closer to Los Angeles than the Angels. I mean, what are they talking about?
Speaking of which, I remember one time before I had moved to Southern California, this is in the 90s, somebody said, yeah, I'm from Orange County. I'm like, oh, L.A. I didn't know there was a difference between L.A. and Orange County. My God, you would have thought I suggested or implied that they were like from Kabul or somewhere. And it was such an insult to say they were from L.A. as opposed to Orange County. But these guys want to steal the name Los Angeles to be able to brand themselves.
1,000,000,000%. And I mean, it's not foolhardy because remember, we all agree the Chargers should still be in San Diego. Okay, we'll just leave it there. The Thunderbolt, the whole thing. When San Diego moved from San Diego to Los Angeles, the franchise on the Forbes list was like 31 of 32. They're now top five just because of the Los Angeles branding. And nobody cares about the Chargers in this city. So just give you an idea of what market size and what markets matter in particular. And what some of these owners are thinking about, the Spanos family. Wait, am I conflating the Spanos with the Orioles owners?
No, you're correct. Spanos is correct.
Okay, my bad. Angelos.
Angelos, yeah.
Angelos family. Spanos, Angelos. Two cheap families.
Did you guys catch last night the Orioles fans chanting for Kevin Brown?
Did they really?
Yes.
They're chanting free Kevin Brown.
Yeah.
It's a PR. And you know what else it is? It's such a likable team, but ultimately if they win, it's an ownership win. And so it's almost hard to pull for them.
And it's weird when you make a move as a lead. I think, not that I know anything about leading anybody. I've worked for a lot of people who led me, but when you make a decision that is so obviously wrong and everyone calls you out for being wrong, and you stand by the decision and you still keep Kevin Brown suspended, Like, that to me is like the grossest part about it.
So it tells me Angelos is an idiot. All you have to do is say, look, a bad decision was made here. I want to apologize. We're going to retroactively give Kevin Brown his payback for which he was suspended. This was an egregious error on our part. And I'm telling you right now, people would forget about it and move forward. But they have decided to draw a line in the sand for absolutely no reason.
Yeah, they doubled down on pride. It's a dangerous, dangerous thing. Two things before we get to the top 10. One, I'm sure you guys saw the story. I'm not trying to bring the show down, but Henry Ruggs got 3 to 10 years. I'm not Judge Wapner, and I don't know much about the justice system, but 3 to 10 years for driving 160 miles an hour, hammered, and killing a young lady and her dog. Again, not political. I have no clue what that even means. Sorry.
Well, Patrick, I'll tell you where the accident happened. It's about a mile from my house. It's actually one of the main roads. That's the nearest main road to me. And I don't even know how at 3 o'clock in the morning, when there's nobody on that road, you can go 156 miles an hour.
We've all driven down it. You're right by it. I totally agree with you. I don't even understand conceptually how you can.
Yeah, exactly.
Some innocent person just driving along is dead because he is a selfish idiot. Like, it's
murder. By the way, this is factual. Burned to death.
You know, it's murder. It's murder.
I'm not literally just stating facts. You got to be kidding me. Also factual. This will make Dustin Swedelson very happy.
What makes me happy?
Josh Hart, a 4-year, $81 million extension with the Knicks.
It does make me happy because I relate to Josh Hart. Look, Josh Hart doesn't do a lot of things well. Neither do I. But what he is, he's the heartbeat of that team, and I am the heartbeat of Sharp Money.
But before we get to your top 10 real quick, you mentioned Josh Hart.
Facts.
I love these Nova guys. Mikal Bridges, Jalen Brunson, Josh Hart. These guys all...
DiVincenzo's a Nick too, by the way.
You got three
of them together.
What I'm saying is, though, the way they play, it's like they all come from that Jay Wright system, and they just know how to play basketball.
Yeah, you know the problem with that, with having three Villanova guys on the team? We're trying to win a Larry O'Brien, not the NCAA tournament.
I agree with you. Yeah, because they're all under 6'7" if they're from Nova, unless they're Ed Pinckney.
I just thought of something. Jay Wright's going to coach the Knicks one day. You heard it here first.
Oh!
I'm going to say no.
No, he's a New York, New Jersey guy.
No, he's from Philly. He's from Pennsylvania.
Bucknell. But it's the same thing.
No, but he coached at Hofstra.
He's young enough.
He has ties.
He's young enough. He's going to get hungry. The Knicks will want him. He's good looking. The whole thing, it'll work. Jay Wright feels like a Knicks coach.
I'm into it right now. Make it happen.
I'm a huge, huge Jay Wright fan.
Top 10. Let's go. It's two at a time, so we got plenty of time to get it in. This is the big guys' top 10 chain food restaurants. They're casual sit-down chain restaurants. Olive Garden, Cracker Barrel, Texas Roadhouse, Cheesecake Factory. That's 10 through 7. What's number 6?
All right, number 6, I feel like this restaurant gets hated on. My grandmas used to take me here together. They love this place, and that's Red Lobster. Look, we're talking about when I did my appetizer list that free bread is my favorite of the appetizers. I think you can make the case that no one has better free bread than Red Lobster. And they got a few other things in the menu that you just aren't going to find anywhere else. Like, their coconut shrimp is elite. They do a crab or lobster Alfredo with linguine that just, it blows everything out of the water.
Did you mention the rolls that they serve at
Cheddar,
the front?
Cheddar Bay biscuits?
That's what we led with.
The biscuits.
We led with it. Lobster artichoke dip, the Admiral's Feast of all the fried stuff. There's one more thing. Oh, I'm not even a dessert person. Key lime pie. Elite key lime pie.
Key lime pie from Red Lobster. That's legit.
I love Red Lobster. When they do like look at me, we're aware. But when they do the feast where it's all you can eat, like two different types of seafood, I am all in on Red Lobster.
How is number 5 this low?
I know. And the issue is, it's like, it just doesn't see the rotation that often for me anymore. But Outback, again, elite bread with a great butter that's somehow like very fluffy. The Bloomin' Onion is revolutionary. Probably the best cheese fries in the game. Also, again, coming from me, this may sound weird. I actually think Outback has the best salad dressings I've ever had in my life. Every salad, they make them in-house. I know this for a fact because I asked about it. Their blue cheese ranch and honey mustard are so much better than everyone else's.
This won't come as a surprise to Patrick, and you're going to lose your mind. I never add any kind of dressing to salad.
Oh, it's so boring.
Oh, my gosh.
Just eat. You might as well be eating a garden.
Hey, it's like Sebastian Maniscalco says, running through the garden.
And I love a bloomin' onion. Love. Great job. Great job, boys. Great show. Nate Tice, Tim Jenkins, Colton Bartholomew, and Scott Spritzer, thank you. Another big show coming up tomorrow here on Sharp Money.